This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Sports to the Max. News Talk 830 WCCL. Getting them in just before the cold comes. David Hedberg, Jim Robinson from Mr. Basketball Committee. Which means, in essence, that they travel the state of Minnesota watching the best boys basketball players there are. Jim, lower that microphone. Bring that down so you can... Yep, get real close to it when you talk to it. I forgot to set you up on that. Sorry about that. Susan here will run your microphone. You have to turn it on or off. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us,
Thanks for having us.
Good time of the year, David, huh?
Oh, love it. Yeah. Basketball is about halfway through and seen about 30 games myself. I know Jim's seen about a similar number. So there's a lot of good talent in the state this year, so it's been a lot of fun.
Last night you were at Lakeville North and Prior Lake, which was kind of the feature game of the night, and we shot video of it for our news last night at 10, and I looked at that had packed house written all over, and it looked like a pretty good place to be.
I got there about 6 o'clock, so I saw about the second half of the JV game just to make sure I got a seat. But, yeah, by 6:40 or so, it was, you know, people were standing in the balcony around the gym, and you know they probably had, you know, a good 2,000, 2,500 people there. It was a lot of fun.
Whoa. Jim, having traveled these roads a long time, do you have a favorite gymnasium that you go to or a favorite atmosphere?
Oh, I don't think there's a favorite anymore because we have so many schools that have upped their facilities, and therefore a lot of them look a lot alike, but some of them are a tiny bit better than others, and the basketball courts.
I grew up, though, in David's country, man. When you get a good one outside of Minnesota there, you get a hotbed game. They pack those gyms pretty tight, and those are fun nights.
Yeah, I was down there a couple weeks ago for Minnesota Valley Lutheran was playing Springfield.
Yeah.
We've got two guys on our watch list. And I think Springfield had won 42 straight Tomahawk games.
Is that what they won? I can tell you this. I ain't never lost a game in Springfield when I was in high school, so that must be since I was out of high school.
Yeah, and they played MVL, and MVL beat them in overtime.
Oh, really? They snapped the streak?
Yeah. They snapped the streak. I think GFW had the streak of 43 games. That was back in my day in high school with Lyle Muth as the coach. And
Lyle was my assistant coach at Gaylord. He came over for a couple years. And we had a streak of Daryl Kroon was our coach. We were just talking about this. They won something at Gaylord like, I can't remember, 56, 60-some straight home games, something like that. We played 3 years, and I was sophomores and senior, and we lost once at home. So, yeah, he was quite a coach. But, yeah, in those gymnasiums, though, they've got – I've long wanted to, and David, you probably see more of these than Jim just growing up there, but there's all these gymnasiums that are no longer the main court anymore because consolidation and everything else. But, man, there's some stories to tell. You know, stage gyms that are set, they were built so that you could have plays and, you know, musicals. You know, they got kind of the theater seating, and you got to be careful not to fall off. And small, small gymnasiums.
Oh, yeah, we played on gyms with tile floors, and you had the chairs, you know, the folding chairs that were, you know, 2-3 inches onto the court.
Yep, Gibbon had the smallest I've ever seen. Now, I'd love to walk in there again because it's been, you know, obviously so many years. And you go, you wouldn't believe that people played varsity games there, would you?
No, and that's to say, when I grew up, say some of the games we did, yeah, they're very small courts and say a lot of atmosphere in them.
I mean, they're
a lot of fun, but hey, you look at them now, you know, with the modern amenities, and, you know, they certainly didn't have them, but, you know, the atmosphere and the fans were, they definitely showed up.
Yep.
One of the other things we have to remember is that we used to have gymnasiums that have two division lines.
You mean the restraining line?
Well, no, division lines. And you would have a division line on one end of the court and a division line on the other. Then you have the center line.
Okay, what's the division line?
So the division line was a 10-second line.
But so, oh, yeah, the 10-second line was different than the mid-court line because the courts were so small, you mean?
Yeah, the courts were so small. And so that was interesting. And of course, I didn't realize that. Oh yeah,
you were refereeing, weren't you?
I sure was.
Yeah, and you had to make sure you knew where the division line was,
absolutely.
And not get confused.
Absolutely, because once you got past the division line, then that means you were in the front court.
Okay, but an over and back would have to go past mid court or past the other division line, or what was it?
Past mid court.
Okay, so mid court was still the over and back line.
Yeah, mid court was
but
over
the 10-second line.
Ten second. Yeah.
Well, things have changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it? Do you remember, like who were some of the teams that you refereed the first ones, Jim?
Oh, some of the first teams I refereed down at
Were you in the city conference or where?
Nah, Cokato. Up at Cokato, up at Howard Lake.
Yep.
Out at Wilmer, Litchfield.
That whole Highway 12 area.
Worked a lot of ball in that area.
Yeah.
And then a lot of ball.
Now, what years would this have been when you first started refereeing?
This is in the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And so you saw some pretty good teams?
Yeah, well, you know, Howard Lake used to be.
Yeah, a great team. Yeah.
Used to be the team next to Edina and also Wayzata.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thought that, Howard Lake is going to make it this year. Well, not so.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But yeah. They had a lot of good basketball there over the years.
Because they were in the same region, which was Region 5 back then.
Well, it was just one class,
it
huh?
Was one class, yeah.
Yeah. Now it's multi-class. You see a lot of different. The other thing, David, that helps you and everybody else, I guess, Mr. Basketball and beyond is, it's not that hard to see kids and get comparisons anymore. In other words, at one point in time, everybody played their own little schedule. I mean, it was the conference and then another six games from basically the area. Well, now we play enough games and all the tournaments and the breakdown classics that you get a lot of looks. You know, good teams want to play other good teams from all over the state. So Rochester will come into the cities and Minneapolis North will go to Caledonia and all those things. It really helps, doesn't it, in terms of as you evaluate, particularly for what you guys do?
Yeah, it really does. There's each year, you know, Hopkins and now Creighton, they host a breakdown classic.
Mm-hmm.
So Hopkins has 16 games. So 32 teams come in, you know. Some from the metro, but some from outstate, and they try and grab some of the better teams with players. So that's definitely one of the ways we like to start out the season because we can see so many players in one sitting. Yeah, and there's actually one coming up this weekend too, the Border Battle.
Yeah, Wisconsin against Minnesota at Eastridge.
Yep. Yeah. So that's Saturday at Eastridge. I think it's
starts
at 10
o'clock. NBL's playing on that one. I see.
Yeah, they're the first game against Thorpe, mm-hmm. and then they go through up until basically 10-10. So there's seven good games. I think there's five rated teams.
I think
from Wisconsin
and Eastridge at the end.
Yeah, Minnehaha, Eastridge, Apple Valley's playing.
Apple Valley.
Yep.
How do they pick the teams from Wisconsin? Do they try to find comparable, or is it just who wants to show up and different based on enrollment, or what?
I think there's a committee that selects those, so they try and pick teams say that have some drawing power top rated teams from Wisconsin or have higher college prospects, and they try and put interesting matchups because obviously teams don't play between Minnesota and Wisconsin that often.
Yeah.
So usually there's some pretty good matchups and the games are pretty competitive.
Jim, when they brought the 3-point line into high school basketball, did you think that has that had a dramatic effect, or what did you think?
Well, it's really changed the game and it's changed the scoring and how if one team gets behind, very easy to catch up, and especially if you've got someone on your team who can shoot the three. Example of that are. You get ahead by 12 points, and 12 points sometimes is like 2 points because a couple of threes and you're back in the game again. So the three has really, really changed the game. Not only has it changed the game at our level, but it's also changed the game at the lower levels. And when I say change the game, if you go and watch a lot of the younger teams play in the AAU league, the kids just put them up from anywhere on the floor. Because
yes, they do.
Everyone thinks that they're the best three-point shooter in the world.
Because the problem is they see one go in,
and they forget
about the five they missed when they're shooting around. And I go through this. I mean, I'm in the midst of this youth basketball stuff. And then you say, you can't shoot from there because you can't make it from there. And they say, no, I made it. And that's good enough for them. Well, that doesn't mean you're good enough to shoot that shot in the game. And you try to give them, especially young kids, just live at 10 to 15 feet. But the problem always is, David, is they've always got a friend that's a pretty good three-point shooter. And they feel like if they don't keep up with that guy, then they're going to fall behind, so they got to shoot the three. Well, the problem is they're not ready to shoot the three, and it's a very frustrating part of the process.
Well, they see it on TV, someone like Steph Curry.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, people can't shoot that way, but I can shoot a 25-footer. I'm not going to make it. But I can't dunk like the guys on TV. So a lot of people try and mimic what the pros are doing or what the people in college are doing. And obviously the three-point shot right now is definitely the –
Well, in fact, I mean, there are coaches that are basically have conceded to it. They've said, you know what, this we're going to live with it. we're going to take a bunch of threes, and we might get beat, but there's a pretty good chance it might go in, and so we'll just take our chances because it's we're better served doing that than trying to develop a post player.
Well, there's a number of schools in the Metro, because each game I go to, I do shot charting, and there's a number of schools where you'll notice where 60% of their shots or more are three-point shots.
Well, that many, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I was at the North Caledonia game.
Last week?
Yeah, and the one of the North players really hadn't scored in the regulation time, and they played overtime.
Mm-hmm.
This kid, the first shot he took in overtime was a three, nothing but the bottom of the net. Took another shot, a three, the same thing. He made a layup, and he made two free throws. And
double figures by the end of the night, huh?
It was like over with because he could shoot the three.
Okay, so let me ask this question, David. Do we have a lot of good shooters in the state, or do we have a few? Because shooting is an art, and it takes a lot of time to be a really good shooter. Do you see a lot of really good shooters, or do you see – I mean, what's your take on where Minnesota's at in terms of shooting?
I think in the last 5 years, we've got a lot more really good shooters in the state. I think, you know, 5-6 years ago, we're kind of migrating from, you know, kind of the mid-level game you're talking about, 10 to 15 feet. And now I think the kids have been doing it for 6 or 7 years and practicing it. It's becoming much more of a quality shot. You know, some of the kids, you know, like you said,
they're not just forcing it.
Correct. I mean, some you still see some that are forced, but there's a lot more. You know, offenses are run for. You know, there's picks, there's designs to get kids open from three. So I think, you know, that's had an effect where, you know, the three is much more of a weapon for a lot of the teams now than it was.
Jim, who's the best shooter you can remember that you saw that you refereed?
Oh, the best shooter.
Well, keep in mind, you never saw me.
Yeah, that's right. You can see either one of us. Yeah.
The best shooter, oh, my gosh. I've seen lots of them, just tons of them over the course of my lifespan.
Did you ever have anybody score 50 in a night or anything like that?
No, because, you know, when I came along, we weren't shooting threes.
No.
We were still shooting twos. The kid from Marquette, he now happens to be a NBA coach. And
Doc Rivers?
Yep.
You saw him play in high school?
Oh, yeah. He was probably one of the best shooters that I've had an opportunity.
Probably just a great player, huh?
Yeah. And, of course, he played for Al McGuire.
Yeah.
And, you know, Al McGuire was a little different than the average coach.
Yep.
Then. I mean, completely different.
Yep.
And kids who went to Marquette would still go to Marquette if he was there.
Yeah.
That's how different he was than the other coaches.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, I used to have him on the radio show. He's passed away, of course, since, but quite a broadcaster, too. When we come back, we'll talk about what constitutes a Mr. Basketball candidate with the Mr. Basketball Committee. Sports to the Max on News Talk 830 WCCO. David Hedberg, Jim Robinson in studio, Sports to the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO. They are the Mr. Basketball Committee as we head towards the fun time of the year in high school winter seasons. David, how many games do you try to watch in a week or a month, or how do you do it?
Well, usually over the course of the year, I'll see about 70 games, maybe a little bit more this year, probably 60 in person, and then maybe 15 or 20 online. Mm-hmm. That's one of the nice things you talked about, some of the advancements is, you know, a lot of the games, you know, the prep spotlight games, you know, a lot of the games are online, you know, so I can, you know, go to a game and then still watch two or three others so I can see two or three games in a night.
Well, Jim, how far do you travel to watch a game?
Anywhere that there's an official or that there is a player that we need to see.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go south, north, east or west. Makes me no difference. I try and see somebody every night. And
Wednesdays is hard because there's very few games. That's why we're able to get you in tonight.
Yeah, I believe there's only about
two on the schedule. Yeah,
I checked that too. Five hockey games and two basketball games.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, Jim, along that line, part of the reason that they have it to play Wednesday games is a shortage of officials. Does that bother you? Do you see a way to curb that trend?
Well, you know, one of the conversations regarding that is, a few years ago, we didn't play as many games. And now we're trying to put 20-some-odd games into a two-day playing time, which is Tuesdays and Fridays. That's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if schools would re-look at their schedules and say, we can play some games on Wednesday and Thursday, and even Saturday.
Yeah.
The shortage of officials might still exist, but not the way they talk about it today.
Well, the other thing they could do is play more Saturday night games. You look at Saturdays, it's almost all afternoon.
Yes.
There's no reason you couldn't play Saturday night games, and guys could actually even work two games probably in a day if they had to. But for whatever reason, I don't know, hockey plays at night. David, do you even know? But basketball, they play very few Saturday night games.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Outside of, say, the breakdown this weekend, you know, they've got some games in the evening. But, yeah, the predominant number of games on Saturdays are either 12 or 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. You know, you get your Saturday night free and all that, but it doesn't hurt to, I don't mind going to a good ball game on a Saturday night either.
Oh, my wife wants me home sometimes, but no, I'd definitely be up for, you know, going out for Saturday night games too.
Yeah, she can come with, right?
Yeah, she comes to her share.
So tell me what you look for when you're looking for a Mr. Basketball. Obviously, you guys kind of know who's out there and who the top juniors are going in, but what defines Mr. Basketball to you?
Well, you know, we start out looking at about 100 young fellows who are all seniors. And we kind of try and see as many of those as we possibly can, along with other scouts that we have who provide us with information. And then we get down to where we are today to maybe like 33 or so. And that's when we really zero in on the better players. Everyone is not, quote unquote, a top 10, and everyone is not a top 5. And what we try to do is to look at players from the competition side. We try and look at them basically from the skill side as well, because that's the important part of what we try to do. And then we try to say, which 10 are the best, and then which 5 are the best of the best by what we see and how the committee will come together and have a discussion on all of those players as it relates to who's the better player, who have they played against, what's coming up for them, who will they play against, and more importantly, are they the best?
Right, we'll take a break on that. When we come back, we'll talk about the reputation of a player or maybe somebody that's projected to be a great college player versus what they're actually doing in their senior season. And is there a difference, and how do you take that into account? Mr. Basketball, really basketball in general, talk sports to the max, News Talk 830 WCCO. David Hedberg, Jim Robinson in studio. Running Mr. Basketball as we head down the stretch of the basketball season. A couple good months left. Okay, so there are kids that are really good players, and there are kids that are really good players and they're projected to be great college players. In other words, they're getting most recruiting attention. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're the best their senior year in high school. You guys have all seen, you know, a person that's going to a Division II school can be the most dominant player in the state of Minnesota at the high school level. They may not have the potential to peak perform, you know, that the colleges are looking for, but they may be the best player in high school in Minnesota. Tell me how you get between those two things, because from the outside looking, everybody's going to say, well, whatever one that the colleges want most must be the best player. But that's not necessarily the way it is all the time, David.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. I mean, and we hear stuff like that, too, about who's projected to be a top college player or maybe a one and done. But what we look at is just solely how they perform in the high school basketball season. You know, Jim mentioned, you know, that we do go to some AAU games in the summer just so that we have, you know, some names on our list for the upcoming season.
The more you know, the better, huh?
Correct. But, you know, as far as determining who's on our watch list that came out a week and a half ago in the top 10 and who ultimately wins Mr. Basketball, it's what they do during their senior season. So that's why it's so important for us to see them as many times as we can so that we know, you know, how they're performing, you know, how they, you know, work with their teammates, you know, leadership skills, things like that, and how that translates into, you know, our votes when we get together as a committee.
Jim, give me your thoughts on that, because a lot of the kids, like I said, they're not necessarily even going to a big institution, but boy, they're sure good at the high school level.
Well, I think we can look at a number of kids like that. And a lot of that has to do with the parents. Parents who think that their kid is more than what their kid is and think that their kid should be a Division I player when, in fact, they're a Division II player. And coaches who don't always recommend their kids to go forward, and especially at the Division I level, and the kid and the parent feels like they've been misled, they weren't treated fair, and our whole thing is, as Dave just said, one senior who plays very well during the senior year. And we have a lot of young people who play well, but some are just better than others. And those normally are the kids who possibly can go to D1. I know we had a few years ago a discussion as it relates to a couple of D1 kids we thought. And we thought one should be a quarterback and not a basketball player, and winds up being a basketball player.
But that has nothing to do with Mr. Basketball, you know, right? It's just right. how they play in basketball.
So how do you ascertain between that young person and the kid who works hard in practice and wants to be a Division I player but winds up, and he's really a Division II player? So we don't look at the kid, as you said, Max, where they're going to go on after that. We look at the fact that they are seniors, and that senior player deserves to be in our top 10 or in our top 5, and possibly Mr. Basketball.
Okay, and I'm not asking you to crown a champion here, but let's just throw out a few names that you've seen and just tell me what your impressions are when you see him. Obviously, the Hurt kid, Michael Hurt, down in Rochester, gets a lot of attention right now. You've seen him play. What's his skill set like? How does he compare to players you've seen in the past?
You know, Matthew's, he's 6'9".
Yeah, Matthew. And Michael's at the U, yeah.
Yeah, and, his shooting range, we talked about that before with the three-point shooting, his range is almost unlimited. He's got wonderful ball handling skills, can get his own shot off. And, he's got a pretty unique skill set for a player his size, to be able to shoot from, 25 feet on in. So Matthew's, he's a good rebounder, a good defender, but, the outside shot is really what differentiates him with his size.
And, when you look at him, just as, basketball fans want to know more that haven't seen him play, how does he compare to Minnesota kids that we've seen in the past several years coming out of the state?
I think he compares very favorably. I mean, he's, obviously, we talked about, the number of looks he's getting. People are talking about him possibly being a one and done going to the NBA. He works incredibly hard at his game. He played on, the D1 Minnesota AAU team this summer.
Played
with a number of other kids that are, on our watch list. And he really excelled at that level, too. So playing with a number of other players, that are going to be D1 prospects.
And he still stands out.
One of the things that probably we don't talk about as it relates to our various different players on our watch list and who wind up being top 10 or top 5 is the fact that when we begin to look at them, a lot of times they all go together. And we...
What do you mean they all go together?
Well, different styles, but they can do a lot of the same things. And one might be at one level, one might be at another level. And we try and again to be sure that any kid that we select is at the top of his game when he's a senior. And if we do that, then we've done what we should do as it relates to finding a Mr. Basketball for 2019.
All right, let's talk about some more names. Zeke Nagy out of Hopkins, I mentioned. Great skill set going to Arizona.
Yeah, he's, you know, Zeke is a real physical presence down low. In the last, really last couple of years, he's developed more of a mid to mid-range jump shot to a three-point
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, he's even got a three-pointer now, doesn't he?
Yeah, so he can definitely, he's good from 21 feet on in. And Zeke's, you know, an incredible rebounder, you know, defensive player. He gets a lot of block shots. He changes the game for Hopkins. You know, you really don't drive in the lane on them because they've got, you know, if you get burned, you've got Zeke behind you. So, Zeke is definitely one of the elite defenders in the state.
Tyler Wall you saw last night.
Yep. Yeah, Tyler Wall, we saw them play against Prior Lake last night. And that's one thing, too, when I look for the games, at least for me, that I want to attend, I like to look at, you know, good matchups, you know, so you can see someone that's going to challenge Tyler Wall. And Prior Lake has
That was the matchup last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, Prior Lake's got a couple, you know, Robert Jones is on our watch list, and then Dawson Garcia is a junior.
Yeah, he's a junior, so you can keep an eye on him next year, but yeah.
Yeah, so last night's matchup was kind of fun because Dawson Garcia and Tyler Wall went one-on-one, and first half of the game, Lakeville North really dominated. I think they were up by 21 for a while. And then we talked about
that big lead, huh?
Yeah, we talked about that, too, with a three-point shot. Prior Lake hit three or four three-pointers in a row and came back and pulled, you know, I think the game ended up being about a 9 or 10-point win for Prior Lake or for Lakeville North. But yeah, Tyler Wall, he's really a great leader on the floor. John Oxton, you know, the coach at Lakeville North, lets Tyler bring the ball up an awful lot, which I think is always a benefit for kids if they have that ability, because at the next level, Tyler's going to Wisconsin. So he's going to be asked to, you know, be more of a point guard or a shooting guard, you know, a lot more ball handling. So it's one of the things, too, in the last 5 years, yes, what's changed is coaches are giving the taller kids the ability to bring the ball up the court, just as opposed to just having them run, go sit on the low box, you know, on the box.
Yeah.
They're actually out on the three-point line. They're bringing the ball up. They're breaking the press. They're, you know, running transition, things like that. So, yeah, Tyler's definitely got that ability, too.
You know, Jim, last year, Trey Jones was, you know, kind of wire to wire, you thought he might win it. But when you think about it, man, there were some good players. Daniel Turrell, you know, Gabe Kelscher had a great year. I mean, there were a lot of great players last year that could have won it. It's just that Jones was the best of the best.
And that's what we try to select, the best of the best. As Dave was just talking about, the big kids, the kids who are 6'6 and above, being able to put the ball on the floor, being able to do a lot of the things that you'd see a guard do or a point forward do. And kids have decided, hopefully along with their coach, that we're going to put the ball on the floor. We're not going to always play with our back to the basket. And we're not just going to be a one-dimensional player. And so that's what we've got going on today. We've got our big kids who are agile, who can handle the ball, who can really dribble the ball, and wind up doing some magnificent things as it relates to being a basketball player in what we see today.
I think one of the words they use is positionless.
You know, so yeah, there you
there's
go.
There's not
yeah.
really a one, yeah. two, three, four, or five anymore.
That's almost out the window.
Correct, yeah.
I mean, at the NBA level, like if you say to me, because this literally happens to me when I'm doing television, you say, Andrew Wiggins, you write the title out, right, because he's going to be on your interview with him. And then you go, what do I call him, a guard, a forward, a wing? Really, that's where the game is at.
Right, yeah.
I mean, Towns is, I guess you could call him a center, but I don't think of him as a center.
Right? Yeah, he doesn't spend that much time in the paint.
No,
I mean, he's outside the three-point line as much as he is down by the basket, yeah.
De La Salle's got a couple with Battle, and Terry is going to Stanford. He's a great point guard. What do you see from him?
Yeah, he's, well, Jim calls him the magic man, just with his ball-handling abilities and the way he's able to, you know, cut to the hoop and his quickness. And, Tyrell is, you know, I think he's going to be a really good player at Stanford. He's
smart kid,
you know, yeah. He and Jamison, that's a nice 1-2 punch. I mean, De La Salle always seems to have a couple of players that pop up on our lists each year. And Jamison is another one of those. I think he's 6'7", 6'8", and he kind of lives outside the 3-point line. He's got a very nice stroke, with the development of the 3-point shot. I mean, Jamison has worked on that the last couple of years, and, you know, that's a real weapon for him. So, you know, the combination of him and, you know, Terry, that's a pretty formidable 3A team.
They also, Jim, they played a good schedule. How much does that give you a good idea when they play the best teams?
what that tells us, that they're good players. They're not just players, but they'll play against anyone. And when I say they'll play against anyone, meaning that they'll put their best foot forward in that particular game. And they do that. And we have to look at the overall picture of what's going on the floor. And is a kid able to do the kind of things that we think they should do? And do they, above all things, play good, solid basketball? See, when you begin to look at our number of people, we just don't look at the fact that they're great scorers. We look at the fact that, are they a good all-around player, and are they good for the team? That's all part of it. That's how it works, and it doesn't work any other way. Again, I go back and I say, it's the best of the best who winds up being Mr. Basketball.
When what do we got up north? I guess I haven't really looked that close. Are there some from up north that are standing out to you?
Yeah, we've got on our list, we've got Cade Gogolai from Northwoods.
Mm-hmm, yep.
They've been down a couple times. Noah Christensen from Breckenridge. I'm just looking at our list. Matthew Johnson from Fergus Falls. So we've got
Fergus has a good team,
And then we've got a number, we've got two from the Tomahawk Conference, Jake Kettner and Isaac Fink.
Where's Kettner from?
MVL.
If that's Todd's son. I don't know. I'm just talking out loud.
It's actually Corey Kettner.
Oh, so that's Corey's son? Corey's a good player, Nicklin.
Yeah, Corey was actually, that goes back to when I was in high school. So Corey was the big guy,
meat market,
two pounds over. And actually now Corey's, he runs Minnesota Rise. And that's one thing I wanted to mention too, is not just Minnesota Rise, but really the growth of youth basketball.
So Big Kett runs that in the summer?
Yeah, so Corey's got, it's several hundreds. I'm sure he'll text me later that I got the numbers wrong. Yeah. But I know he's got several hundred, boys and girls, and they do three-on-three leagues. And really, that's really growing across the state. So Corey runs that there, but then other people have it, in different parts of the state. So kids have the access to play basketball 10, 12 months a year, which really develops them when they start that when they're fourth and fifth grade. By the time they get to be, freshmen or sophomores in high school, they've been playing against good competition for 5 or 6 years. So, they're just better players than they were back.
Breck's got a pretty good player right now, David Roddy.
David Roddy,
Yeah, what's his skill set? Great quarterback, too.
Very good quarterback. He's a beast. Yeah. He's,
looks like Barkley, a high school version of Barkley.
Yeah, some of the mismatches just in the physical size. I mean, there
aren't you
that
can't
many,
guard him down low.
There aren't that many guys. And, but again, his ball handling and, an AAU and, with Breck, his ability to handle the ball and shoot the three, he's really got a complete game.
Yeah.
So he's not just a big guy down low. He's able to, break the press
Gentlemen, we ran out of time, but I appreciate it. When will it be named?
So a couple things coming up. The top 10 is on February 4th.
Okay, so that's a couple weeks away.
And then March 4th, we announce the final five. Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday, March 26th, the last few years we've been working with Jeff Municki and the Timberwolves.
Jeff, yep.
So it's kind of a nice thing. So we have the final five. They come. They can bring some family members. The Timberwolves are very generous. They provide us tickets for the players. And then we make the presentation on the floor. And then afterwards, Fox Sports North is coordinated with us. So that Jim Peterson interviews each of the five candidates and talks about, their season and what their plans are for the upcoming year.
All right. Very good. Gentlemen, thanks for coming by.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
Stay warm.
Yep.
Take a break. Come back. Al Malmberg with a preview on the other side. Sports to the Max. Eric Nelson in for Al Malmberg. Al might be watching the Wild and the Avalanche 1-1 in the first period. Eric, you're sitting in for Al over the next few hours, but you and I will both be at the same place next week down in Dixie in Atlanta.
Yeah, Hotlanta.
You've been to Super Bowl before. Were you at the one in Atlanta? Didn't they have like an ice out there?
They did. They had weather that was Tennessee and St. Louis.
Is that who was playing?
The old Rams.
Yeah. I'm sure.
That was the exactly. That was the Rams championship with Dick Vermeil and Kurt Warner, the magical season.
Yep.
They had a lot of ice. I remember driving around downtown Atlanta Super Bowl Saturday. They called it a winter storm. They said, don't get on the highways, stay in, hunker down. Me and a buddy of mine from Winnipeg, of course, he's not fazed by weather. We got out and checked it out. We wanted to go to Stone Mountain nearby. It was like driving on slush. It was a piece of cake for anybody who's dealt with northern weather.
It wasn't like glare ice.
But shuts the thing down. Yeah. And places like Atlanta just aren't used to it.
How's downtown Atlanta? I haven't been there for many years.
Well, it's bustling. I guess they rebuilt the freeway system, 6-7 lane interstates going through. And it should be fun. You know, I think Minneapolis and Atlanta have a lot in common in the sense they both host major events a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they've had
Final Four next year goes to Atlanta again. It runs that circuit.
Isn't that amazing? And they got the new venue, so they're eager to show it off. And Braves got a new ballpark out there in the suburbs now, Cobb County. So I think they build stadiums faster than Minnesota.
They do, man.
The Georgia Dome wasn't that old.
It's like I meant to get down there, and all of a sudden it's not even the stadium anymore.
Yeah, they blew it up right next door.
So, you know, obviously last year I covered it here. Every city kind of adds their own little – based on what that city offers. We skyweighed it and mauled America. It basically here is what we did, and had a great snowfall on the Saturday before on Nicollet Mall. And I'll never see that again. The number of people on Nicollet Mall that day, that was pretty special. It was snowing, and it was something else. Do you think Atlanta will be similar? I think every team that hosts the Super Bowl, first of all, claims victory afterwards. And they all say, you know, I had people tell me this is the best they've ever seen. Well, of course they're going to say that, you know.
Exactly. No city has ever said the day after we did a cruddy job.
Yeah, Dallas came close.
And don't come back and give it to us. Well, and Dallas was another weather issue.
Yeah.
The coldest Super Bowl I've covered was in Dallas-Fort Worth until last year here. Granted, the game was inside, but during the week, as you know, it got frigid here. But Dallas, I don't think they have one salt truck. I saw the Metroplex crippled. This is an area bigger than here, about 4 million in Dallas-Fort Worth suburbs. Nobody could get around. All the Super Bowl parties went awry. They were canceled. I felt bad for the organizers because you know how much work goes into prepping for something like the Super Bowl.
Everybody was laughing because it was Jerry Jones Bowl, you know?
Well, it's karma because he was supposed to get it the following year, and Indianapolis was going to get it. But Jerry said, no, we got to get it before Indy did. And so the weather came down and bit Jerry in the butt. The next year in Indianapolis, it was in the 50s all week. It was great.
That's funny. Yeah. So next week it'll be so as I recall last year from a media standpoint, you basically we didn't want to stay in downtown, but if you were, I guess you'd just shuttle out to the Mall of America to get your player interviews, and then you'd go to the festivities in downtown Minneapolis based on what it was you wanted to cover, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Last year I really think of it as almost being the Mall of America Super Bowl. I was a little surprised that they didn't have any teams here in downtown Minneapolis, because everything was centered in Bloomington. Now, I thought the mall did a great job. They took advantage of, you know, visitors could be inside, not have to deal with the weather if they didn't want to. Atlanta, I'm sure, is going to be different, and it'll be spread out. But there's no doubt the people in Atlanta were here taking notes, and that's what happens. I remember running into Minnesota Super Bowl folks as early as San Francisco 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, everybody goes out to the city and says, okay, we're going to soak up what they do, the good, the bad, the pro, the con, go back and figure out how we can tweak it.
Yeah, and that's what they, obviously you play leapfrog with that, and the NFL just keeps it. The NFL sure won last week, didn't they?
Why, remarkable, Maxie. Huh? I mean, really, you're right. Twin overtime games, that's never happened before. And I think the NFL really wins because they wanted to be back in L.A. so bad, and now all of a sudden the Rams are a Super Bowl team.
It's your team, buddy.
I was just out there over the weekend. Very little buzz, even after going to the Super Bowl.
But they draw pretty well, don't they?
They draw well, but I got to tell you, Sunday I was in Santa Monica on the beach. I saw very few Ram jerseys. I detected no passion. Let me give you an example. If the Vikings had beaten Philadelphia at the Link last year, here in Minnesota, there would have been eruptions, right?
Yeah, we would have been wearing purple even if we didn't put it on.
People would have been doing cartwheels down Hennepin. Yeah. In Santa Monica or Greater LA, I didn't see any of that on Sunday. I know the game was in New Orleans, but I didn't feel the vibe at all.
Your good friend is Larry Fitzgerald. Senior Larry Fitzgerald Jr. committed to a one-year contract extension with the Cardinals. A lot of people thought he would retire after this year. He decided to play another year. Surprised?
A little bit. I mean, it's certainly a team that struggled. They only won 3 games last year. Another new coach coming in. But I think, He may have bought into whatever Cliff Kingsbury told him about, you know, revamping the offense.
Kingsbury must want
the air raid, as they call it. Yeah, he's going to throw the ball. So I think if you boil it all down, Maxie, Larry Jr. just loves to play, and he's probably petrified about the thought of how am I going to fill that void of not running out a tunnel.
It's a big one.
Onto a stadium on an NFL Sunday. You can't replace that.
No. And, you know, if you still can, why not?
Exactly. He's in great shape. He's been relatively injury-free. And he's doing it with one team.
Yeah, 16 years, one team as a wide receiver. That's pretty remarkable.
And, you know, they have Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
Year two should be better.
Yeah, and you know, he knows that. So, I mean, he sees him every day in practice, so he knows what he believes about Rosen, right? I mean, he may go, this guy's right on the cusp.
Exactly, and I think there was a lot of frustration with the way the offense was run this past season. Larry Jr., I think, only had like 68 catches, which for him is way below. He's typically triple digits. So now he gets a chance to revitalize, maybe help the younger wideouts, and cement a legacy that really, I mean, we're talking about maybe a Mount Rushmore receiver in NFL history. He's got to be.
Third overall in receptions. What do you got coming up?
We'll talk some Twins Fest, Hot Stove. Al Newman going to join us. He'll be out there at Twins Fest on Friday.
Newman's going to be there?
Yeah. A quick appearance.
You'll be there Friday.
I'll be there Friday. You will too.
Friday night, yeah.
Yeah. And looking forward to that. And we're going to have Jarrett Payton on. Who works for WGN in Chicago now. I ran into him when the Bears were here knocking the Vikings out of the playoffs.
We got to go. That's all coming up next on WCCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.